This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
You are listening to the Newcastle United Fan Show right here on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm joined in the studio with a smiling Matt Ketchell from BBC Match of the Day magazine and London Magpies' very own Jim Colberg. There is so much to discuss where Newcastle United are concerned, as is every week. There's always drama on the Tyneside, especially where the Toon Army are concerned. Today was an interesting day. It was the Sports Direct AGM. Not much happened there. Not many talking points. Not many members in this studio getting on our TV screens, making a name and a face for themselves. We're going to be talking all about that. Sean Wade, another big member of this squad on the Newcastle United Fan Show. He was there. We're going to be hearing all about it. But also, we're going to be talking where it really matters. Football is back this week. Newcastle have a tricky tie away at Anfield. They play Liverpool. Apparently, Liverpool, they've not made the greatest start. They've looked okay since last year. They've not really carried that momentum on. So I reckon Steve Bruce, another wonderful tactical masterstroke of just brilliant performance from Newcastle. I know we're going to expect it all. We're going to be talking about that. Maybe was Jamal Lascelles overlooked for England? That's a big talking point. I know Newcastle fans, I want to hear what they think all about this. Let's start, though, right at the very top, because it's been a theme for weeks. Mike Ashley out. Today was the Sports Direct AGM. Jim, for people that don't know a lot about it, can you indulge us a little bit? Tell us exactly what was going on today.
Well, it was the Sports Direct annual shareholders meeting. It's occurred in the past, and we've been present in the past as Newcastle fans. It's a chance for people who have an investment in the company to express their views, ask questions, journalists to attend perhaps, and do the same. But we know that today journalists weren't able to do that. Questions were minimal, and it became a situation where Mike Ashley was justifying his leadership at the company. So the London Magpies were there. You know, we look for opportunities to express our displeasure and our points across when it comes to what's going on at Newcastle United. And he doesn't hang around. So we got to him. We said our views, held our banners. They're all there to see on wider media today. And it was just important, I think, for us to be there and to show that this is there's an undercurrent of unrest all the way through. You know, his tenure at Newcastle United, and we're going to talk about the football. Obviously, it's very important, but the politics are always a crucial element to the conversation at Newcastle. So it was a busy morning for us, yeah. So we're lots of journalists there, lots of media Ferrari. Following last year was really quite quiet and understated. I think he's got a lot to answer for not just Newcastle fans, but also the shareholders as well.
We know there's a lot of drama where Newcastle are concerned. You say we're going to talk about the football. We have to talk about the ownership, the politics. We know there's been talks of a boycott this year. Fans aren't happy in the slightest. The Steve Bruce appointment, the Mike Ashley still. This is an ongoing saga. But does this feel different from years gone past? Because you said, you know, normally journalists were allowed, some were allowed, questions maybe were permitted. This year, journalists were banned. Why is it so different this year? There feels like there's an icier reception towards journalists and Newcastle fans themselves, Jim.
Well, last year he was again in front of Parliament. And I think the scope just seems to widen and on his wider practices, because he's trying to grow an empire. Clearly, lots of people would call him a successful businessman, and there's certainly an argument to be made for that. But there, he is a controversial character, and I believe a lot of the media that were reporting today actually took quotes that said that from shareholders themselves. So it's hard to ignore that side of things. You know, that meshes the gear. You know, you've got a community football club that's a pivotal role within the community and supposed to be a symbol and a bastion of what's going on in Newcastle and in the fan base more widely. And then this kind of abrasive style of ownership and approach to football, which no other club seems to be doing in the Premier League, at least, that really gets fans goat, really, and is what we have a problem with.
Well, this is what you do have a problem with. Ketch, journalists were banned. You're a Newcastle fan. Does this just feel like this is another thing that Mike Ashley's got wrong? Is this just another way we can point the finger at him and blame him for something else?
Well, let's face it. Mike Ashley is a very rich man. He's a very powerful man. Mm-hmm. And he, with that power, you know, he feels he can control things. He likes to be in control of the situation. So he's trying to control the media by not letting them in, by restricting questions. And I think it's quite disrespectful. And there's a degree of arrogance about that. And that's one thing. That's why there was the London Magpies were there today, because it's very rare for Mike Ashley to appear in public. So it's actually good to go and see him and try and get our message across that we're not happy with his stewardship in Newcastle. So, you know, communication, he even admits himself he got it wrong, and he even comes out and says, you know, I probably shouldn't be owning a football club. And he's basically admitting, you know, we are a vehicle to promote some of these other brands. So as Newcastle fans, we're obviously going to balk against that. And, you know, Mike Ashley is just something we've got to deal with and accept. And one thing I would say is that there's been lots of different protest groups and boycotts and this and that. The London Magpie groups, I think, the London Magpie group, who are obviously London-based Newcastle fans, they've been one of the most effective for me, because they've been able to go and get face to face with Ashley when he's been in Parliament. They've been up to the village where he's from in Totteridge in North London and voiced their concerns about the way he runs the club. And I think he'll find that highly embarrassing, and it makes him feel uncomfortable. And really, he should be embarrassed, and he should be made to feel uncomfortable, because he's made us as Newcastle fans feel uncomfortable.
How annoying is it, Ketch, when you've got an owner that comes out and says, I probably shouldn't be running a football club? I mean, it's great when you get honesty and transparency, you know, but it's a little bit like last week. You had Michael Owen say, I wasn't in love with football, I probably shouldn't have been playing. Yes, Michael, but you were happy to take £120,000 a week. Now you've got an owner, it's just going to rile the fans up even more, isn't it?
Oh, Charlie, it's scary. How can he be in charge? Yeah. But he didn't need to say to us, I don't know what I'm doing, I shouldn't be in charge of football. We know that. Mm. He's appointed Joe Kinnear. He's appointed McLaren. He's sacked. He's not renewed Rafa's contract. The decisions, it's mistake after mistake. We know he shouldn't be in charge of a football club, yet he still is, and he says he might never leave us.
It's a bit of an extreme comparison, but we've seen the plight of Bolton Wanderers and Bury, and how there maybe should be a screening process for people that want to buy clubs and ownership. It should still maybe apply to Premier League clubs, even if there is more money involved, because if his ultimate aim is just to promote other businesses outside of sport, outside of football, it's not really the way Newcastle United should be being run, is it?
But it's on paper, when he took over in 2007... billionaire English football fan takes over Newcastle. We were all delighted, and the first year was pretty decent. There was investment. He brought in, he already had Sam Allardyce, and we started off the season well, and then he brought in Keegan. So it started off well, and he's just become disinterested with it, and he refuses to nurture it and let it grow. He just wants us to sit there. He wants us to finish 17th in the league, keep promoting Sports Direct around Europe and the world. That's it. So it's very difficult to screen football owners. I have sympathy with the EFL. How do you know? There's no money in that level of football anyway, so they want owners to come in anyway, so that it's really difficult to judge whether someone's going to be a good football owner or not. And if there had been fit and proper tests in 2007, I'm sure he would have passed with flying colours, because on paper it was great that he came in, but it's been a pretty disastrous 12 years since then.
Jim, Ketch mentions there that it did start well. Things were off to a decent start, but if we're going on today's standards. But where's it all gone wrong? Because my image was, I remember him downing beers. Oh, he's one of the lads. He would be in all the away sections at the London home games, you know, with his big Newcastle shirt on, downing pints. He's one of us. You know, this man is going to restore the club to its, like, famous glory days. Where has it all gone wrong? How has this demise been so rapid?
I'm not sure we ever went for he's one of us. I think it's more of a I'll be one of them for a bit.
Yeah,
and I think he's involved in sports business. It's good to be seen engaging with those sorts of activities. You know, feeling like you're part of that. And I think initially, because we said he's a person who has a lot of money, a lot of power, with that comes ego as well. So I think initially, the ego of running a football club and owning a football club, there's a reason why, you know, Arab billionaires want to do it and things like that as well. It's this idea of PR ego, as well as the riches that it can often bring as well. And that changed as soon as rot set in with the results, with criticism, and what the legacy that comes on from that as well Mike Ashley keeps saying things like, I shouldn't run a football club. I've made mistakes. I've made this mistake, X mistake. But they just get repeated. There's no, there's the act and theatre of being contrite and apologetic. And it never transpires into anything constructive going forward off that. And I think that's why Newcastle fans feel like they're banging their head against the wall with boycotts and pro. You know, I want to go to the match. I want to go and
you want to support your team,
support my team, and I do. But it's, you know, you have to look at these things as well. You can't ignore them and let them pass. And that's
Ketch. Why I asked that, because obviously when he was going to the games, at least it was giving off the illusion, the impression that, oh well, maybe, you know, he does care about the relationship with the fans. He knows what the fans want. He knows how the fans feel about this club, even if he genuinely meant it or it was just an act. But now he stopped doing that. Now it's the complete opposite. He literally does not care for anything that the fans care about. That's what it seems to. How was that relationship broke down, even if there wasn't a great relationship? But at the start, he did seem to care for the fans in some small capacity.
Well, Newcastle was a plaything for Mike Ashley. He floated Sports Direct and he had a load of money in his pocket. And he was like, what shall I do? I like football. I'm going to buy a football club. So it's a toy that he's quickly become bored of. Mm-hmm. Less than 12 months, he doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't know how to run a football club. He had no background as to how football works, apart from being a bit of a fan. You know, I think he was a Spurs fan. That was it. He had no background, and he just thought he could come in and it would be easy. And he made mistake after mistake. He was taking advice from people he was meeting in pubs and casinos. He brought in a guy called Tony Jimenez, who famously, that was the beginning of the end for Keegan. They fell out. He brought in Dennis Wise, Lambais. He actually had quite a good chairman at first. Chris Mort was our chairman for the first year, and I think he left to pursue another a different direction, and that was a bit of a shame because he was quite a competent guy. And as soon as the wheels fell off with Keegan, he left because Tony Jimenez and Dennis Wise were signing South American players for fortunes and agents fees, and Keegan hadn't seen the players, and we were selling Milner and things like that. And then after that, Ashley just shut up shop. He brought in Joe Kinnear. It's crazy to say, he brought in Joe Kinnear, and then he kind of
met in a pub by all accounts.
Exactly. And he washed his hands of the club, and it's just been a catalogue of errors since then. And sometimes he'll show a bit of interest, but then he'll go away for 6 months. You won't see him for 6-12 months, and then all of a sudden he'll come back to the game. So his interest wanes, and sometimes it comes back. But ever since the first 12 months, he's really had no interest in the club at all.
Well, such an interesting debate on the Newcastle Fan Show, all about the Sports Direct AGM today. We're talking Mike Ashley. Please, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio or call us on 0208 70 20 558, and we can share your views. Well, it could have been all so different, because this summer there was a failed takeover bid by Britain's richest man, Jim Ratcliffe. How close was this to coming off? We're going to be talking to Kieran Maguire next, and he is the man in the know.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
You are listening to the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, and I'm joined in the studio with Matt Ketchell from BBC Match of the Day magazine and London Magpies' very own Jim Colberg. We, of course, have been talking all about today's important meeting, Sports Direct AGM. The journalists were banned. What does this mean for Newcastle? They wanted answers. Were the questions even allowed? We've been talking all about that. Later on, we're going to be looking at that massive game against Liverpool on the weekend as the Premier League returns. But I'm delighted to say we are now joined on the line with Kieran Maguire, football finance expert at the University of Liverpool. Kieran, thank you so much for joining us and giving us a little bit of your time. We heard the news that over the summer, Britain's richest man, Jim Ratcliffe, pulled out of a deal to buy Newcastle United. And since then, he now owns French football team Nice. He has the cycling team Ineos. What could have this meant if Newcastle were able to get this over the line, Kieran?
I think if he had taken over, then the purse strings could have been loosened a bit more. I know Mike Ashley is a controversial figure, not only at Sports Direct, but also in respect of Newcastle fans. He's not injected money since they've been promoted. In fact, he took some money back that he'd previously lent the club, whereas the other guy, Jim Ratcliffe, would have. I think he would have tried to take Newcastle to a next level.
Kieran, it's Ketch here from BBC Match of the Day magazine. I've got loads of questions for you, but the first one I wanted to ask you was, why is Newcastle an attractive proposition to a potential buyer? Can you give us a sales brochure, just in case there's any potential investors listening right now?
It's an attractive proposition because outside of the big six, to a certain extent, it represents a bargain for a potential investor. If you want to buy Chelsea or Arsenal or Spurs or clubs of that nature, it's going to cost you in the region of £1.5 to £2 billion, realistically. Whereas you could pick up Newcastle for £350 million, you could then spend the same amount of money on improving the squad, and that could catapult you certainly towards the Europa League. And if that works, then you've got the potential to move on to challenging for the Champions League. And the Champions League is very much where it's at present. The amount of money that's sloshing around there is just crazy. I mean, Liverpool made, both Liverpool and Spurs made over £100 million from it last season. So I think Newcastle, with a fan base, being a one-city club, having history and heritage as well, could be a very attractive proposition to a potential owner.
So what do you think, in your opinion, is the true value of Newcastle right now? Because we've had a few failed takeover bids, and we've been led to believe that those have failed because Mike Ashley has priced people out of the market. Bearing in mind Jim Ratcliffe bought Nice for less than £100 million, how much do you think Newcastle, what's a good price for the club?
Well, I've done sort of various reports and sums and stuff, and realistically, sort of around between 280 and 300 million, I think, would be a fair price. I think the one concern that any owner would have is that if there is, with Newcastle, unless there is a substantial improvement in the playing squad in terms of investment, there's always going to be a possibility of relegation. We've seen it twice in the last decade. So I think sort of 280 to 300 million would be a fair price. And my understanding is that Mike Ashley is sticking out for 350. So it's, yeah, to you and me, £50 million is a ridiculous sum of money. To Jim Ratcliffe, it isn't. But I just think he's just probably been put off because nobody wants to be seen to be losing to Mike Ashley, because he's not the most popular guy around. And if I think if there's somebody as shrewd as Jim Ratcliffe, if he feels that Ashley's got one over on him, he'll just walk away from the table. And unfortunately, that's what's happened. I've also spoken to some brokers, some agents who sort of deal in clubs, and they say trying to get information out of Newcastle and trying to nail them down to meetings and things of this nature has proven to be quite tricky. So it's a very frustrating process for anybody who wants to buy the club. And let's be realistic, the club has been up for sale for a couple of years now. Now, if you or I had a house up for sale for that period of time, we'd drop the asking price. But that's the thing that Mike Ashley doesn't appear to want to do.
Kieran, could it realistically, a deal of this magnitude come down to something as simple as Jim Ratcliffe and Mike Ashley trying to get one over each other? You know, sort of, it sounds almost petty. A deal with buying a football club for hundreds of million pounds comes down to people's personality and attitudes of getting one over of each other. And is this also a case, if we are terms of talking about a deal, only £50 million out, I say only, tongue in cheek, but is this a simple case of Mike Ashley just overpricing Newcastle, pricing themselves out of the market and not working with potential buyers?
Very much so. There's no doubt there have been quite a few people who've asked for information. They wanted to take up due diligence and so on. But the price then tends to vary so that they initially come in with a view to they think they can get Newcastle for less than £300 million, and then the next phone call, oh no, it's £350 that he's looking for. And it gets very frustrating. But running a football club is a tricky business, and therefore you need to get professionals involved. And if the view of your professional advisors is it's not worth £350, and I don't think it is, I do tables of values of all of the clubs, and Newcastle is worth a wee bit less than that, then why give somebody an additional £50 million for an asset which isn't worth that figure? You wouldn't do it for a car or a house, so why would you do it for a football club? And I think Mike Ashley's stubbornness is the main reason why we've not got further along the table with a deal.
Hi, Kieran. It's Jim from London Mags here.
Hi, Jim.
How you doing? I was going to ask that you've talked about the asking price and Ketch has done the same. With regards to the day to day and getting the right people and advisors in place and things like that, fans often accuse him of running the club in a, well, let's call it a unique way, and under-investing in it, and unlike a lot of the other teams in the Premier League, can is this model work? Because it seems to be like the Sports Direct model of buy cheap, sell high, that sort of thing with players. Can that work? And are there examples of where it has worked?
Yeah, I think the best run club in the Premier League is Burnley, and their owners haven't put a penny in over a decade. I know that Mike Ashley isn't popular, but I mean, when he did acquire the club, and I don't want people throwing rocks at me for saying anything nice about him, but the club was in a mess. It was paying out over 90% of its income was going out in wages. He put money in as interest-free loans, and to be fair, if you compare him to the likes of what's happening at West Ham, where you've got the owners who are charging interest, Liverpool's owners, they're charging interest on the loans to the club. You've got the Glazers at Manchester United who are taking out over £20 million a season in dividends themselves. He's not taking money out in that regard. I appreciate there are issues in terms of trying to rebrand the stadium as the Sports Direct Arena or that type of nonsense. And also, I think he really does not help himself with all the advertising for his other businesses at St James's Park. But those businesses do actually pay for the privilege of advertising. He's just stuck in about an amount of money. He put in extra to get them back up to the Premier League the year following relegation. And that's as far as he's gone. I think he's a very stubborn man, and he's not willing to put in any more money into the business. Now that it is a Premier League club, he feels that it should be self-financing. Whereas I think with even just a modest investment, then fans would see something slightly better on the pitch. It could, of course, be argued that he has invested over the course of the last 6 months. You think about the January window with Almiron, and then you've got the centre-forward, Joe Lenion or something like that. He has certainly released money, which he hasn't done to the same extent before. But he's got so many other business interests and so many other business problems, it seems madness to try to run Newcastle United Football Club as well, because he simply doesn't have the time to focus on that part of his business empire, which is burning in other places. There are crises taking place left, right and centre. He can't find anybody to audit the Sports Direct anymore. My understanding is that none of the top 10 firms of auditors want to touch him, because he's viewed as a toxic brand and a toxic person to deal with.
Kieran, looking forward, myself and Jim and Sean, who's another fan who regularly appears on this show, we're all members of the NUFC Trust. Now, this is a fan group. You can pay £1 a year or £10 for lifetime membership. Now, the overall aim of this trust is to one day have a controlling stake in the club. I don't think they'll ever be able to raise enough money to buy Mike Ashley outright, but the aim of the group is to, I think they're predicting that, you know, we might go down again under Mike Ashley, he might become bored of us, sell us on the cheap, and then the trust will then go in with a consortium and have a controlling stake in the club, a bit of fan ownership, a presence on the board of the club. There's about 8,000 to 9,000 paid up members at the minute. Their argument is if they did it 10 years ago, they would now be in a position, you know, they'd have a significant bit of money behind them to properly have a controlling stake in the club. What advice would you give to the trust in terms of putting this together and trying to get someone on the board?
I think the advice I would give is you need to do your sums very carefully, because I've been involved with, I'm based here in the Northwest, and I've spent too much of my time having to deal with Bolton and Bury clubs where you want to be celebrating football. Yeah. Football finance to me should never have to be discussed. You know, I should not have a job in an ideal world. But if you are going to get involved, you need to do your sums very carefully. Because it's not just the cost of buying the club. You've then got the day-to-day expenses, the day-to-day budgets. If the club does get relegated into the Championship clubs last season, they lost £580 million between them. So it's an absolute air pit of a division. As you know from yourself, when you get in there once or twice, you know, it's a really crazy division. And trying to get your numbers right is very difficult. And if you get those numbers wrong, then you could end up in a similar position to what's happened at Sunderland. And it's not just that the Championship that you drop into. It could be League One. Then you've got how are you going to finance yourself in that particular division, especially if the parachute payments run out. So I think what we have to do is a series of something, all the boring stuff, do the due diligence. And my advice would be, if you take over the club, speak to the creditors, speak to the banks, try to get some breathing space to begin with. Say, look, it's going to take us 3 or 4 years to really get to the bottom of this. Let's all shake hands. Let's all look after each other during that period. Don't demand your money back and so on. And you know, have faith in us. Then St James's Park is a huge venue, but it's only being used for 20 to 25 days a year. So how can we make St James's Park a more attractive asset for other ventures? Are there other ways that we can generate income around the club? Could we make it a centre for, you know, health issues and education courses and things of this nature, which you can then sell to you know, the local NHS trusts and local school academies and so on? Because kids who don't want to go to school would want to go to school if it was connected to Newcastle United. So be smart. And then once you've done that, it becomes, you've got all of these extra income streams coming in, and it will then become more attractive. You'll be able to attract good investors and make some money from that, not for yourselves, but to reinvest in the squad.
Kieran, an absolute pleasure to talk to you tonight. Such an insight into what's going on with the club and all the finances. We could actually talk to you all night. We really appreciate you giving us some time. Thank you so much for that. Kieran Maguire there, football finance expert at the University of Liverpool. Such an insight there. I know Ketch and Jim are both going to be taking away what he said, but we can't talk all about Ashley Hatt and the finances and the failed takeover bids. We have to turn our attentions to the real football. The Premier League is back in action this weekend. Next, we're going to be looking all about that game at Liverpool on the weekend and talking about maybe someone who might not have scored for Newcastle yet, but he scored for Paraguay in the week.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
You are listening to the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, and I'm joined in the studio with Matt Ketchell from BBC Match of the Day magazine and London Magpies' very own Jim Colberg. We've talked about very serious matters, the Sports Direct AGM today, shareholders meeting, journalists were banned. We just heard from Kieran Maguire there talking about the failed takeover bid from Britain's richest man, Jim Ratcliffe. Let's turn our attention to football. That's what we really want to talk about. It's what we care about. Football matters on the pitch, not the off-the-field problems, all the drama with the Toon Army on Tyneside. Let's talk about more positive news. Almiron, at the time, he was the record signing for Newcastle, has yet to hit the back of the net, but it could be a turning point because he scored in the week for Paraguay. Is this a good omen for Newcastle, Ketch?
Yeah, I mean, we're clinging.
We'll take it.
He's not... To be fair to the lad, I think he's one of the most energetic and enthusiastic players in the league. If there wasn't advertising boards, he'd run out the stadium. He's everywhere, but it's just not happening for him. And a bit of a sliding doors moment, I think, on his debut at Huddersfield. He went one-on-one, dinked the keeper, and I think it hit the post. Or just went, yeah. Went, if that had gone in at the Gallagher end, we could have been looking at a totally different thing. He hasn't assisted and he hasn't scored for us yet. We've paid £20 million for him. We need him to start contributing. So he scored for Paraguay. We'll take that. He just needs a confidence boost.
It's so tough because when you do look at it from a stats point of view, like Ketch said there, Jim, you go no assists, no goals. At the time was the record signing. That is a terrible return on the value that you're getting. But like you said, the flip side of that narrative, shall we say, desire, commitment, it just hasn't happened for him yet. Are the Newcastle fans a little bit split on Almiron, Jim?
Quite possibly. I think that's the way with offensive players, though, at Newcastle. Because Perez was quite a divisive player in terms of fans' opinion. I was a massive Perez apologist, and he proved that towards the end, which is great. He's having a bit of a struggle this season, I think, as well. But that, I think that's the thing, is that with offensive players, you have to give them a bit more time, perhaps, than you would. And especially when they're kind of presented as these talismans that are supposed to come out. So I think there's a bit of pressure on him to be that person at Newcastle. I think a lot went with two supporting players around him in Rondon and Perez when he was there. He contributed massively to that system. And when you look at games like Spurs, where he played as well, he just ran and ran, and he was a massive part of why the industry and the tenacity shown in that game bore out over a jaded-looking Spurs side in the end. So I like what I see, by and large. I think that he's got to get goals and assists if he's going to prove his worth ultimately. But I do like him as a player, and I think the majority of Newcastle fans feel that way. But there's always going to be that pressure there if you don't live up to the price tag or the fancy name.
Well, he has moved from the MLS. It does take a little bit of a time to adapt. We know the physicality of the Premier League. Jim says he's still behind him, but we need to see more. He's an offensive player, so those assists, those goals do need to come, but he believes they will. Ketch, when Jim was answering, you kind of pulled a face. What are your thoughts on Almiron?
I think the fans are still behind him totally. I think he picked up a hamstring injury in a season ended early last year, early April. I think if he'd played towards the end of the season, we would have definitely seen a goal and a couple of assists for him. But I think if you're a regular Newcastle match going fan, you see what Almiron brings to the team. Certainly last season, the space he created for Rondon and Perez, I think he put a lot of value on Perez's eventual price tag, because Perez, you know, his goal rate went up massively from January onwards, and that was because Almiron was there running in behind defences, creating all this space for him. And I think Rondon the same. He put a few goals on Rondon's tally because of the havoc he caused in the last third. And he was just getting going, and then he picked up the hamstring injury in April. And again, it's been a bit stop-start for him this season. It's with the crazy summer we had, with a new young striker coming in and Alan Saint-Maximin being in and out the squad. Rondon and Perez have both gone. So it's been big disruption for him. He doesn't know the language. We've got to give him time. And I think most Newcastle fans don't have a problem with Almiron. They're going to be patient with him because he's an exciting, quick player.
I'd agree with that, yeah, overall. I think that there always are detractors, but by and large, I think people have got his back.
All right, well, let's turn our attentions to another player, Jamal Lascelles. Now, England at the minute are flying, unbeaten in 10 years in European and World Cup qualifying, 43 games unbeaten, haven't lost since 2009 when they lost to Ukraine. We've got a wealth of options at the minute for Gareth Southgate, especially up top in those offensive positions. And where we was always the most solid, shall I say, we had the most strength was in our centre-backs. We had John Terry, Rio Ferdinand, Sol Campbell. We've had a wealth of centre-backs. We can now argue that maybe this is our biggest weakness in the team. Maguire, Keane has been getting the nod at the minute. Didn't look great last night. He was at fault for one of the goals, although he did make up for it with an assist to Sterling. Has Jamal Lascelles been overlooked potentially for England at international level, Ketch?
Do you know what? I don't think so. It might be controversial as a Newcastle fan, but working at Match of the Day magazine, I interviewed Jamal. He won an award, and we went up to the training ground and interviewed him. And this was maybe towards the end of 2017. And as soon as the interview started, he was quick to segue in. I want to be in the England squad. You know, he's making noises. He wants to.
It's the ultimate aim for any player, though, isn't it? To represent your country.
Yeah, and unprompted, he's saying to me, I want to get an. I think I should have had an England call up. I feel a bit hard done by. He wants that to be projected in the media. I think he's a solid Premier League defender. He was hit and miss in the Championship. Then he had that great season in the Premier League. Then he's been a bit hit and miss, and he's a little bit injury prone. But I think if you look at the other centre defenders, I think Keane, Joe Gomez, Stones, Smalling, Dunk, Tarkowski, even Gary Cahill and Phil Jones, I think they're probably all ahead of Jamal in terms of Gareth Southgate's thinking. The
even
time,
Gary Cahill,
just because of experience. I think if it comes down
Gareth
to that,
Gareth Southgate is about experience, but he's someone that, you know, really believes you have to bleed in the youngster's name. Yeah, he wants that all the way through the under 17s, under 19s, 20s, 21s.
What counts against Jamal is he hasn't been in the under 21s, and if it comes down to it, is Southgate going to hand a new cap to Lascelles, or is he going to play it safe and go with Cahill on, you know, with 6 months say to go before Euro 2020? I think for Jamal, the ship has sailed, and it's probably going to be to Newcastle's benefit because we'll keep him during these international breaks.
Well, Jim, two questions. One, do you agree with what Ketch said there? Is it fair that Jamal has been overlooked? And two, is there a broader stroke now, but a bigger club bias, you know? Because maybe if he was at, a supposedly top six, as we say, a Man United, Arsenal, would he have got that call up a lot sooner?
Well, to pick up on your last point, the last question first, yeah, I definitely think there's an element of playing for an unfashionable and club that's struggled with various things. I will agree with Ketch that I don't think he's been overlooked, because I don't. You want to replace, even if there are mediocre to average, you know, competent players in the England squad at the minute, you want to replace them with people who are world class ultimately, and I don't think Jamal Lascelles is that. He's got a lot of limitations in terms of being on the ball, He did actually do like some sort of searing run down the wing the other week.
But John Stones, who's known for playing out with the ball, can't get in the side of the minute. His confidence is shot to bits. Michael Keane isn't great at playing out from the back, is he? We saw it last night. I'm not going to pinpoint him for that one mistake, of course, but he's not known for being this all-possession defender, is he?
No, but I'll come back. You've got to be an improvement. And yeah. I think Gareth Southgate is the age thing comes into it as well. He's going to want to see people who will vastly improve the team come in and not unsettle. And England have a very, you know, they don't play as often for one as well. So when you have a unit that you work with and you keep them together, it's all the more difficult then to try and just experiment and throw people in. I do think that train sailed for poor Jamal but like Ketch said, he keeps fit for Newcastle, which is always good.
But look at it, Southgate, he made quite a bold call early on as England great. He took Smalling out because he wasn't happy about how comfortable Smalling was with the ball at his feet. I think Smalling's probably better with the ball at his feet than Lascelles. If you watch Newcastle a lot, Lascelles isn't great with the ball at his feet. If you want someone to carry the ball out of defence, it's not really Jamal's game. That's what Fabian Scher does for us at the
Newcastle
minute.
Newcastle have Lejeune and Scher who do a lot of that legwork in terms of
and
that.
And he plays in a three, Lascelles, and he's the anchor. He's not bringing it out from the back. So if Southgate wants two to bring it out from the back, he's not going to go with Lascelles. So I think it's over. He's going to have an exceptional season to get in the England squad. And I hope he does. It'd be great
to
see.
No, it's very honest from you both. You was fair. You said you don't think he has been overlooked. It was, you know, unbiased thoughts there. Let's turn our attentions to another player, because earlier on in the show, we said that we don't want to hear this from Mike Ashley. You know, he doesn't think he should be in charge of running a football club, but we do appreciate honest and open answers, even from players. Sean Longstaff this week, he said the Man United transfer discussion, the saga that was over the summer, it did distract him. He has now come out after the transfer window has closed and said it has distracted him. Do you appreciate his comments, or are you slightly concerned that it did play a part? But we all knew that a move like that, obviously, if you want to stay, we know he's a Newcastle boy, any transfer news, it's bound to have some sort of impact, isn't it, Ketch?
Well, how can it not distract you? You're 21, you're just breaking into the Newcastle squad. He only played at that stage when the rumours kicked in. He was injured. He'd only played nine times in the Premier League. Man United coming in for, you know, 20 million, 50 million. It's crazy.
For nine games, yeah. It's incredible.
And the other thing, you've got to look at it from Sean Longstaff's point of view, is local lad, you know, very honest. Newcastle brought him through since the age of nine. But at the same time, he will know very well the turmoil that the club is in behind the scenes, the lack of investment. And I tell you what, if it came down to talks, Michael Carrick would have been in his ear and said, look, at the time when Michael Carrick was young, looking for an academy team to be in, Newcastle were all over the place. I don't think we had a reserve team at the time. Keegan had scrapped it because he didn't want them playing on the pitch in St James's Park. So we didn't have a reserve team. There was no structure in place. So Carrick went to West Ham, and look what that did for his career. And Carrick would have been saying the same to Longstaff. You know, if you come to Man United, we'll get you ingratiated with all these other young English players. It's the biggest club in the world, Man United, I think. Financially, definitely a huge opportunity for him. If the bid came in, if it came down to talks, he'd probably be mad not to go.
Very, very quickly then, do you still see Man United, as much as maybe it pains you to say, as the biggest club in the world? Because they are having this trouble. Are they still the attractive project, shall we say, that they once were?
Yeah, they just make absolute fortunes. I know that's not really what football's about, making money, but they haven't won a Champions League, they haven't won a league for so long, and they're still making money. So imagine if they did return to the Champions League glory days and the Premier League challenges, then they would become a colossus again.
Well, we've been covering key figures for Newcastle, but we turn our attentions to the game on the weekend. A very difficult tie away at Anfield. They are playing Liverpool, and next we'll be talking to Richard Buxton all about the game.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
You're listening to the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, and I'm joined in the studio with BBC's Match of the Day magazine, Matt Ketchell, and London Magpies' very own Jim Colberg. We have to turn our attention to the huge game on the weekend in the Premier League. It is Liverpool versus Newcastle. Now, these games are normally classics. They normally offer goals. What will it be like on the weekend? Well, I'm delighted to say Richard Buxton, football journalist who covers Liverpool and works sometimes for the Metro and Yahoo Sport. Richard, thank you for joining us. We're going to preview the game. What are your thoughts ahead of this game? Can Newcastle get anything out of this game at all?
Well, you'd probably say not, because Liverpool's record at Anfield is pretty formidable. But obviously, you look at the results at White Hart Lane the other week, and And, you know, Jürgen Klopp's not that. He won't take Newcastle lightly, obviously, under a different manager last season. They gave Man City a shock at St James's Park. They gave Liverpool a bit of a scare in the title running. And clearly, Steve Bruce has got a squad that, can pull a shock. But coming up against a Liverpool team that are in this form, obviously, we know the Newcastle break could be a factor in terms of the rhythm and the momentum. But you'd probably fancy Liverpool to win anyway.
Richard, it's Ketch here from BBC Match of the Day magazine. This week I've been writing a Champions League preview feature for Match of the Day magazine. It's out on Tuesday in all good shops. And I've been writing a strength and weakness for every Champions League team. And I'm struggling with Liverpool's. Can you help me out with a weakness for Liverpool? Because I can't find one.
Probably the goalkeeper at the moment. Obviously, with Alisson Becker being out, Adrian's come in. And he's not had a great start to life Anfield. He obviously shift those in all bar one game, and there's been preventable goals that he's conceded as well. You know, the ones that you look at the Arsenal game, that was avoidable. The ones against Chelsea in the Super Cup were avoidable, and probably even the one against Norwich and Southampton, they were all, you know, born of his own mistakes. So probably he's the weakness, and he's probably going to be in goal for the Napoli game next Tuesday. So I think he's probably the weak link, and you know, the defence are going to have to be a lot more tied up than they normally are when Alisson's in goal, because he's such a strong influence, and you know, he's so confident on the ball, likes to play that from the back. Adrian isn't really that sort of player.
Hi Richard, it's Jim Carlberg here. Obviously we had a great result against Spurs the other week. They were feeling tired. I think there was pressure probably coming off the back of their season last time round. Do you think there's any chance this momentum will come to a stop at some point? And do you think that it's something that will happen this weekend, I guess? I'm hoping so.
I think the international breaks are always interesting, because when you come off the back of one, obviously players are coming back, and Virgil van Dijk really has another rest. You know, he was in the Nations League finals. He was, you know, an ever-present in the run to the title bid last season, and obviously the Champions League challenge. So I don't think they're going to feel the effects of it just yet. But as I say, the international breaks are really curious, because they can happen and you never know. But it is a bit of a look of the draw in these situations.
Richard, we know how strong Liverpool are, of course. Four games, four wins. They've carried on that momentum from last year, winning European Cup. Obviously, the tight running in the Premier League. But Newcastle, they are unbeaten in the last two in the Premier League. So they might have a little bit of confidence. They've had the international break to work on things. You know, they went to Tottenham. No one expected them to get a result there. They come away with all 3 points. Could we see a similar story? Could lightning strike twice?
Probably not, given the form that Liverpool are in at the moment.
Oh, Richard, give us something to go on, mate.
Well, I mean, no one would have thought that City losing the same thing as part of last season. No one thought that Newcastle would take Liverpool down to the 80-odd minute to get the win. So you can never say never, but, I mean, the form that Liverpool team's in at the moment, it doesn't seem like anything's going to stop them.
Richard, we have to get your score prediction then. I'm assuming, I think I know what you might say, but just if you could bear in mind, this is the Newcastle fan show, so don't break too many hearts.
Well, I'll try and be a bit generous here. I think probably with Adrian in goal, I think probably Newcastle will get one, but I mean, there's every chance Liverpool get three or four, so I mean, it's not going to be a happy outing for Newcastle. And I mean, I think the last time they won it on, it was probably early to mid-90s in the league.
So, 94.
94, yeah, I remember it well, yeah. It's a 25-year run, so you wouldn't really fancy them. But again, you know, no one thought they'd go to Tottenham and win, so you can't rule it out. But I do think Liverpool have too much for them.
Liverpool will have too much. Richard, we really appreciate you coming on. Richard Buxton there, football journalist, to preview the upcoming weekend's game. I now have to turn my attention to you two in the studio. It is time for your thoughts ahead of the game and a score prediction. Jim, I will start with you. Where'd you stand?
Oh, there's a lot of grimacing going on here. Well, I know I'm supposed to say something like 4-3, aren't I? I guess, but
have to. Liverpool Newcastle. These games are goals, classics.
Afraid I'm going to have to agree with Richard. I think it's going to be something along the lines of 3 or 4-1, Liverpool's way, and it's whether we get Joelinton into the action and because he can cause problems. I know they've got some big defenders in Van Dijk and people like that, but it's going to be tough. But depending on whether we have the lessons that were learnt from Spurs carried forward, We might be able to give ourselves a chance on that front then.
Well, Jim is saying a Liverpool win. Just before we hear Ketty's prediction, obviously, Love Sport's very own Laurie Callis, a Newcastle fan, a regular on the Newcastle fan show. 2-0 Newcastle. Almiron assisting for both goals. Joelinton getting both goals.
So specific. I love
so
it.
So specific.
Odds on
Odds on that. He's so confident. He wanted the prediction. He wanted to get it out there 2-0. Obviously, he may be in the minority, but he's gone for that Newcastle 2 win. Before we hear Ketch's prediction, Jim, you mentioned there, you know, oh, Liverpool, I think they'll get the win. Is that a case of, one, you genuinely believe that, or two, as a Newcastle fan, we have to prepare ourselves for the worst, because then if it does happen, you know, you was already geared up for that defeat.
Well, I'm forever the optimist.
Clearly.
But, I just think you can't ignore the momentum that they've got. They're riding the crest of a wave after last season. The players are world-class, demonstrable. Almiron's got his goal against Paraguay, so that's...
He's
that's
on a run.
Something, yeah, I mean, that would be brilliant. If we can get, you know, I'd take heart in that, even if it was a defeat, having players like him score and contribute and try and emulate what they did a couple of weeks back, but I do think it's going to be painful.
Well, listen, Liverpool, the run can't go on forever. This is what storylines are written on. It could be written in the stars. There's a rich history between the two in some serving up some classics in the Premier League. Ketch, which way are you going to go? Do you agree with Jim? Do you agree with Richard? Or do you agree with Laurie?
Well, let's look at the stats. Liverpool have scored at least 2 goals in the last 13 games. They're unbeaten at Anfield in the last 40 games. We haven't won there since 1994. So I think it's going to probably be Liverpool 3, Newcastle 4. We're going to avenge the 4-3. I'm calling it now. There's a Premier League, anything can happen.
I'm glad you said that scoreline, because if you do say a bad scoreline, I just have to do some due diligence. Sean Wade a few weeks back said Tottenham were going to win 8-0. And if you noticed, he hasn't been on the show since. He's still serving a suspension. He will be back next week. It is his birthday Monday, so happy birthday for that, Sean. We're looking forward to welcoming you back. We don't know your prediction, but I'm sure you might have gone a little bit better than the 8-0. You might have gone for a 6-0. I think this weekend... I'm not saying it to appease you both. Liverpool lose their unbeaten start to the league. Newcastle get the result at Anfield. Arise, Sir Steve Bruce. What do you make of that?
We're going to struggle to keep hold of Bruce at this rate, aren't we? The big clubs will be in for him.
The big clubs will be in for him. It sounds silly, because there is no consolation in football. You want to win. At the very least, you want to draw. A loss is helpful to no one. But will there be some positives to take from this weekend if you do put in a very good shift and a performance, Ketch?
It's unfortunate timing that we're playing Liverpool, because we had a good result against Spurs. We drew against Watford, so we have picked up a point. To hit Liverpool, you know, Liverpool and City are just way above anyone else. So to hit them away now is bad timing. You know, we're probably not going to get anything from it, but, you know, If we were to get anything, it would be absolutely massive. That's the carrot at the end of the stick.
Well, we're all split in the studio. It's been a great show tonight. We were talking to Kieran Maguire all about that failed takeover bid. Newcastle do play Liverpool on the weekend after the international break. The Premier League is back. Where will the points go? Whichever way they go, we'll be here to talk about it next Wednesday, 7 o'clock on the Newcastle Fan Show.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.